This is going to be a fun one here. A gentleman who has put together a very unique piece of entertainment. I had the privilege of being able to screen this film recently. I speak, of course, of Anvil, the story of Anvil. And we have with us tonight the producer, director, and writer for the documentary, Sasha Gervaisi, joining us here tonight on the phone lines. Sasha, welcome to the FDH Lounge, sir.
Thanks, man. It's an honor. Thank you for having me. It's great.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have you in, and I tell you what, I really enjoyed the movie. It was a pleasure to get that in the mail from your film company. My first screener copy ever, so that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, you know, what we've been doing is just showing people the movie, and I think that it's just been amazing. It's been multiplying, you know, and it's just it's reaching a lot of people, man. A lot of people that I think weren't expecting to be touched by a movie about heavy metal, you know.
It's an amazing story, you know, and I've been researching it pretty copiously in preparation for speaking to you tonight, and I'm struck by the fact that again that you ended up in your extreme youth at that point being a fan of this band and following them, and you know you've had your own journey over the years here, you know, with everything that you've been doing professionally, and you know you've probably been following them from afar, and then in the last couple of years to have gotten together with them and collaborated on this project, it must seem almost surreal to you in some ways.
It's really surreal. I mean, it's just a really magical story. I mean, as you said, I was a 15-year-old kid obsessed with, you know, hard rock and heavy metal, saw this band Anvil, who no one really had heard of, in London in 1982, and I just loved them so much that I went backstage and I was like, hey guys, you know, I am your England's number one Anvil fan, and I just knew all the songs and I knew the music, so I think they were kind of amused by this young kind of English no-one kid who was obsessed with the band. And they said, hey, we've never been to London before. Will you show us around? And I said, of course, you know. So I took them to the Houses of Parliament and Westminster Abbey. And the best part was I took them home to meet my mother. And when she opened the door and saw these, like, four long-haired Canadian headbangers whose faces she recognized from the posters on my bedroom walls, she was horrified. She said they could stay 10 minutes. But, you know, I actually got them to sign the posters I had of them on my bedroom walls. And they were just super cool with me. And they said, hey, you want to come out with us next summer, you know, when you're on your school holidays, come out as a drum roadie. So I actually ended up kind of running away for the summer in 1983, and I went on a tour of Canadian hockey arenas with this crazy heavy metal band. You know, it was a little like Almost Famous, I guess, but it was just an extraordinary experience, and these guys just really kind of treated me like a younger brother. And then, you know, I did a couple more tours with them during the 80s, lost touch for 20 years, then got back in touch in the summer of 2005, and as you sort of rightly pointed out, it's just been just an unbelievable journey, because the interesting thing about Anvil is most people don't know them, but they influenced the whole generation of bands, such as Metallica and Anthrax and Megadeth, and all of those guys are in the movie talking about, you know, what an influence the band was, but they themselves never made it. They never sold hundreds of millions of records, but they never stopped. And so really it's the story of these two founding members of Anvil, Lips and Rob Reiner, who really just never gave up on this pact that they made as 14-year-old kids, literally to rock together forever. Here they are in their 50s, and you know they're still rocking, and now they're having their moment. It's just kind of this beautiful, magical story about really about not giving up, you know?
Oh, it's an amazing story, and you know, you mentioned the gentleman who gave the testimonials here towards the beginning of the movie here, because there were, again, so many guys who were influenced by them, whether it be Slash or Lars Ulrich or some of the guys who were talking there. I do want to ask you about this, though. There's a point in the movie where when they're at kind of a low point here, mm-hmm. It had been spoken of previously almost as though it were like a supernatural mystery, why these guys never made it. What just struck me was almost out of nowhere, Lip starts talking about, gee, you know, if only we'd had better production since then. We had about the best producer in the business. What did you think of that? Because it influences part of the rest of the movie there. Was that desperation on his part? Did he have an epiphany? It sort of came out of nowhere. And
right.
Just as a storytelling device, I'm wondering what you make of it.
Well, I think the reality is that the reason they didn't have good production at a certain point is because they didn't have support. They didn't have the infrastructure that any great band needs to kind of push it through and make it. They didn't have. Basically, they got signed in 1983 by the world's biggest rock manager, a guy called David Krebs. Great guy, managed AC/DC, the Scorpions, Aerosmith, and Bon Jovi. So knew what he was doing in that regard. But as far as Anvil was concerned, they were playing what later became known as speed metal. It didn't even have a name there. Really thrashy, fast stuff. And he was saying, hey, guys, you should just calm that speed stuff down and be a little bit more like Bon Jovi. And I think at that moment, the biggest rock manager in the world is telling you to sound more commercial. You're a 25-year-old kid. You go, well, maybe he's right. Well, turns out that in this case, he was wrong. And, within a year, Metallica had appeared in San Francisco and recorded this incredible album. And in a certain sense, Anvil had a moment and they kind of didn't kind of recognize what it was. And I think it's like, life boils down to certain periods in time occasionally. Life could be, I guess, a little bit like that movie Sliding Doors. One decision that you make, can affect your whole destiny. And I think that's what happened. I think that, the biggest manager in the world gave them a bit of a misdirection, and the business wasn't sorted out. And after that, they didn't get the major label deal, and they didn't have the production support, and they really didn't have an infrastructure that would have allowed them to become successful.
See, that's really interesting. That answer, it's counterintuitive to how I was approaching it, because my question would have been, were they incapable of being commercial enough? You look at Metallica, how they really blew up after the Black Album. They had a great following in the 80s, but they were able to take it to another level once they were more accessible. Megadeth had their moment with Symphony of Destruction. Mm-hmm, I look at them, and Guns N' Roses was pretty accessible from day one with their debut.
I think with all those bands, what you're talking about, the part of the success is they were authentic. Mm-hmm. I think that Metallica, particularly in the beginning, when everyone was kind of getting into the glamier Motley Crue stuff at 83, 84, they were like, screw that, we're just going to wear jean jackets and do Kill 'Em All and Search and Destroy or whatever. They refused to kind of follow the vogue. And I think that's why, in a certain sense, they became incredibly successful. And I think Anvil experimented just at the wrong moment with doing something that they really weren't. They were kind of trying to be something that their manager told them they should be. And I think that was like a real the wrong choice at that point in time. But then obviously they corrected the mistake and they just kept on going. But I think that moment where they could have kind of jumped from clubs to kind of arenas had passed. And ironically now, here we are, 25 years later, and they're this summer playing the biggest shows of their career. They're playing the Monsters of Rock Festival in England in June in a couple of weeks. They're going to be playing in front of 65,000 people.
That really is amazing, but I'm left to wonder at this point. As you said, these guys are in their 50s. I'm left to wonder, and I don't even know if you would know this or could surmise this, how they're ultimately going to determine what success is, having made it. They've had this documentary made about them. They're going to play these big shows this summer. Do you think ultimately having that moment or this period that they're in is going to ultimately be something where they can look back and say we made it, or are they looking for something more durable, do you think?
I think that the band wants to succeed on its own terms. It's really all about the next album that they've written, which part of which I've heard, which is incredible. They recognize that what the movie's done for them is really opened the door. We've got the world's attention here. Obviously, I'm sure, as you know, we've just pretty much everyone, from Ozzy to Slash to all sorts of other musicians, from bands like the Talking Heads to Coldplay to John Mayer, like pretty much every artist and musician you can think of has really rallied to the cause. And I think they recognize, well, look, we have a huge opportunity. How many metal bands, get on CNN or in Newsweek, They recognize they're having this big moment, but they also know that ultimately it's going to be about the next record, and they're really excited about it. I think that the energy of the film, though, has given them such a huge amount of positivity and optimism that it's really affected the material they're writing. And I've got to tell you that they are psyched to get out there and tour properly early next year and really kind of let the world know what Anvil is as a band, now that people know them as people and they've seen the movie, or they will have seen the movie certainly by then.
One of the things here, too, and I think this will be intriguing as people go to watch this documentary, I'm struck by almost kind of a coincidence here, because you've got Slash being one of the guys talking about them in the beginning of the movie here, and of course, he famously dealt with his own issues with Axl Rose. I'm looking at Axl Rose, and I'm looking at Lips, and I'm thinking to myself, if Guns N' Roses was the band that never really took off, you know, how much would he be like Lips? Lips is just that polarizing figure that seemingly every great band has.
Yeah, I mean, he's an unbelievable frontman. I mean, when I first saw him play, when I was this 15-year-old kid in 82, he came on stage, you know, wearing the most outrageous outfit. He was like in a leather harness, and he was brandishing a chainsaw, you know, with this flying V, and everyone was like, what on earth is this guy doing? He was a brilliant frontman, and what a player, and Rob Reiner, the drummer, as, you know, Lars Ulrich attests to, probably the finest heavy metal drummer since, you know, Ian Paice playing with Deep Purple. I mean, Lars is an absolute Rob Reiner fan. And I think that these guys are just incredible musicians and incredible show people. And as you rightly say, Lips is the centerpiece. And I think when you meet him, he's just so charismatic. He walks in the room, even though he's not in a big band, and you just say to yourself, he's a star. And I think the great thing is that it's kind of finally, you know, 36 years after they started this band, it's finally kind of happening for him, which is just the most wonderful part of the story.
You know, and yet you watch the movie, and it's easy to forgive him so much because of the way that he is, but you also watch it, and you know, there's part of you that wonders why Rob Reiner or somebody else never put a fork in his forehead. I mean, there's just that side of him, isn't there?
Well, you know, think about it. What's the difference? You know, the only difference between someone who's a genius and someone who's completely insane is success.
Well, true.
I mean, you know, the point is, it's if it's successful, you think, oh my God, they're incredible. And if it's not, you just want to put a fork in their head. But, you know, what I salute in the movie, and I think what people are responding to, is just this absolute indomitable, like Rocky-like spirit. And I think Michael Moore was the one who said, this movie is like Rocky with Marshall amplifiers. It's about these guys who just refuse to give up. And in refusing, you know, they just wait long enough that some kind of miracle happens. And that's exactly what's happening. But yeah, I hear you. You know, it's some people would see that staying on that long when it isn't happening is maybe, you know, desperate and crazy. And I think it probably is desperate and crazy. But I love that about Lips. I love people who won't give up just because the world tells them to.
Oh, it's you know, he's a amazing, compelling figure in this movie, no question about that. And you know, we've spoken a lot about the content of the movie and everything. Well, let's talk about basically the track that it's on at this point. I know it's come out in some limited release here this spring. What's the progression of that? Where's it at with that? When's it expected to be out on DVD?
Thing about the movie is we just keep getting bookings all the time. You know, it's a small movie. It is in limited release, but I think we're gonna hit like 150 cities by September. So it's one of those things, just like a movie like Once, or movies that begin small and then they have incredible word of mouth, which is, as you know, our movie has, you know, just unbelievable word of mouth and reviews, people coming back to see the film. We had a show in LA where we showed the movie on Monday night, and the band played afterwards in the theater, as we're doing tonight in New York. You know, on Monday night, we turned away 450 people at the door. I mean, it's just this growing phenomenon that people, you know, and it's fans making it happen. It's not kind of a big studio with millions of dollars buying advertisements and pummeling the message. It's, you know, people making it happen, and the incredible support of VH1 and MTV, who've just been phenomenal. If you've watched VH1 at all in the past 2 months, you will have seen our trailer and adverts playing, you know, and it's just wonderful to see this thing evolving. But yeah, it's going to play all over the summer across America. We're here in New York now. We're in our sort of eighth week at the Angelica Theater, which is incredible. And then the DVD will come out early October. But we're going to be probably in theaters, you know, at least, I would say, until the beginning of September at this point.
Oh, that's tremendous. You know, with the traction that this project has had, I mean, it's got to be an exciting time in your life, Sasha. And additionally here, I see that this is the year that apparently you're going to be putting out this biopic, working on it, of Hervé Villechaize, which I
know. That's right, yeah. I'm doing the tattoo story, the tattoo from Fantasy Island movie.
Oh, nice.
It's awesome.
How's that coming along?
That's a whole other story, but that's the next film that I'm working on right now.
Oh, excellent, excellent. We always like to give our guests a chance to plug anything, Sasha. So in addition to those two things there, anything else going on that you'd like our listeners to know about?
Sure. I've just written this movie for Keanu Reeves called Henry's Crime, and I think we're going to shoot it this fall over in Buffalo. And, just a lot of great stuff going on. But to be honest, the most exciting thing happening right now is seeing the band that I loved as a kid sort of starting to make it and people just wanting them to win. And, they're playing some pretty big shows and they've got a big tour coming up in the fall. So hopefully your listeners, can check out anvilmovie.com and see, if when the movie's coming to their area and also when the band's coming to their area.
Oh, absolutely. And Cleveland being the rock and roll capital, hopefully, they will be coming through, I would hope. And
They will be. Absolutely. And we're going to do this thing, like I said, called The Experience, where we've been doing it in Landmark theaters across America. You see the movie, and then the band literally bursts out of the screen right there in the theater and plays three songs, and people are just going insane.
Oh, that's awesome. That just sounds tremendous. I would love to check that out when it hits Cleveland. And I tell you what, it is just an amazing story, Sasha. I'm very indebted to our New York Bureau for hooking this up, your people who were very cooperative in setting this up as well. It was a pleasure to have you on, sir, and we'd love to do it again sometime.
Thank you so much for the support, man. And a shout-out to all the great rock fans in Cleveland. Anvil is on its way to you.
Excellent. Well, we will be looking for that with bated breath. No question about that.
Okay, man. Have a great night. Thank you so much.
Thank you. You too, Sasha. Our privilege was ours.
Okay. Awesome. Bye.
All right, bye. Sasha Gervaisi, everyone. Writer, producer, director, and the force behind this movie,